Welcome to PCMC. I'm Mike Bongiorno. I'm here today with the Dauphine.
The Dauphine of France.
Anthony Bongiorno, how are you?
I'm great. I'm so excited.
I'm so excited too. What are we talking about today?
We're talking about Marie Antoinette, motherfuckers.
Holy shit.
The movie.
Yes, the 2006 movie. I believe there's a like a show of it somewhere.
What?
Yeah, I might be totally wrong.
I didn't know that.
I don't know anything. So this is, Marie Antoinette from 2006, starring Kirsten Dunst.
Kiki Dunst.
Jason Schwartzman. Rip Torn.
Rip Torn.
Asia Argento.
Yeah.
Rose Byrne. I forgot Rose Byrne was in it. Like real young Rose Byrne. Tom Hardy. He's not a star of it, but it's when he was young and pretty.
Yeah. Huh? That other guy. Not Tom Hardy.
Steve Coogan.
Yes. No, the guy from 50 Shades of Grey.
Oh, he's the
handsome, first sexy guy. Firsten.
Yeah.
What's her name? Molly Shannon. Yes.
And
Moaning
Myrtle.
Yeah, Moaning Myrtle.
Who has the perfect voice.
Yeah, for that kind of role. She looks like a little piece of candy.
Yeah.
I'm so happy we're doing this. I've been waiting months.
Yes. Well, you have, because you brought up the idea, and I said, let's do it after Halloween. So, okay, what's your experience with this movie? Why'd you want to do it?
This movie had a huge impact on me.
Okay.
You know how there are just certain movies that, like, they're obsessions, but they're just, like, they are high school, or they are college, or whatever. Like, this was college for me. Like, this is – I remember seeing it. I remember being obsessed with it. I remember listening to the soundtrack constantly.
Yeah.
I remember like finding other people who liked it and like being so excited when somebody else liked it.
You showed it to me.
Yes.
You showed it to me and I liked it, but I just watched it once and I liked it so much more watching it again. Now, like I watched it twice this week and I was like, wow, I really love it.
It had a, myself and a friend of mine from college were really into it. Janine was also into it constantly. Yeah. She had a Marie Antoinette poster in her dorm room.
Nice.
It was just like it came at that time where I was all about the aesthetic. I was all about the soundtrack. I was all about all of it. Loved it.
All right. Describe it in one word.
Delicious.
Bro.
Is that what you wrote?
What did I write down?
Delicious.
Delicious.
It's like candy.
It is. The movie does this beautiful job of connecting visually all the finer things in life. Flowers, candy,
cake, fashion. Yeah.
Alcohol,
makeup,
all the things that are colorful and nice and finer. It's all together. It's all like candy. It's all so good.
Oh, God. When I was older, like after college, way later when I was adult, I was lucky enough to be able to go to Paris and visit Versailles.
Yeah.
And it was filmed at Versailles.
It's crazy that it's filmed there, by the way.
It's insane that
they allowed that
and
to happen.
I just remember like walking around like wanting to cry, being like, I can't believe like I'm really seeing this. And like, of course, it's an amazing place, but like having seen the movie so many times.
Right, it wasn't a connection to history.
No, it was
you were like, do you realize where we are? Where we're standing.
Kirsten Dunst stood. Kirsten Dunst
25 years ago.
Fake cried against this door. I was so thrilled to be
incredible
there.
Incredible.
And Versailles is an amazing place.
Yeah.
Do you know the grounds of Versailles are bigger than Manhattan?
Really?
Like the grounds. The mansion itself is obviously like palace is huge.
Yeah.
But then there's that I got to walk through that little village that she made
created,
where she like, I'm gonna play pretend like I'm a poor person.
Yeah.
like that little area. Yeah. It's so fascinating.
Wow. Yeah, I don't know if you know this because it's a historical question, but like, what is everyone doing? Because there's a lot of people there. Like, there's a lot of people in Versailles today.
Yeah.
Like, what are
that's,
like?
That's it looks real. Like a, apparently that's real. Yeah.
It looks. It's like a city. Like, what are
that's
a lot of people doing
court.
That are just walking around?
They're just hanging out, walking around, observing the grounds, playing games.
A lot of playing games.
Dog hunts.
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
Oh, the dogs in this movie.
Great.
She loves the dogs.
Oh,
mops.
My God. That is so sad.
Mops. And then later on, she's like, are you still working on getting mops?
She's such a baby in the beginning.
Yeah.
Apparently, I've listened to the You're Wrong
About.
She was
14, wasn't she?
Yeah. Did you ever listen to the You're Wrong About Marie Antoinette?
No, I haven't.
So much of what's in the movie is totally real.
Like, yeah.
They met her at the border of Austria and France. They made her strip and take off all of her clothes and dressed her in French clothes. They made her change her name.
Crazy.
Because her name was Maria Antonia. And they were like, no, now you're French. You use Maria Antoinette. Like, all of it. They made her give up everything at 14 years old. And then they really did, like, come to watch them eat breakfast. They would come to watch them have sex.
Yeah.
Like, it's insane. Crazy.
It's wild. It does an amazing thing where by being, like, strategically anachronistic, it gets you at a greater truth than if it wasn't anachronistic. Like, you
feel like she's really a kid.
Yes.
Because
the music. Yes, the music helps you see her as a teenager.
And the, like, the Converse.
Yes.
And the stuff like that.
But I do think, though, that at the time it came out, too much was made of all that. I think the movie is more than just that, because it's not.
For sure.
And so it's sparingly. There's like.
You see Converse in the background.
It's almost a second.
Like it's an Easter egg.
It's an Easter egg. And the music, it's not like wall-to-wall music.
There's a lot of classical music on that soundtrack,
too. Yeah. And like the music that they choose isn't even like. Other than I Want Candy, a lot of it's not like the most recognizable hits.
No. You know what I mean? I mean, there's that great Susie and the Banshees, Hung Garden, which is great. But it's like a. It's like a redone version with strings.
Yeah.
So it sounds like appropriate.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot was made of that, which was silly because that was besides the point.
Yeah.
And also, like, a lot of the music that they use, it was really – Sofia Coppola, who's the director, and I think she wrote the screenplay too, like, always has, like, really cool music in her movies.
Yeah.
And a lot of the 80s music that she chose, like, it was from, like, an era of 80s synth pop where they, in the music videos, did a lot of – like cosplay as French revolutionaries.
Yes, yeah,
so
yeah.
Like there's that link.
Yeah, yeah.
The I love the New Order, the song Ceremony.
Yeah.
It's so good. That's my favorite part when that's playing and it's her birthday party.
Yeah, yeah.
What I will say, and then I guess we can get into more like a proper introduction. What I love that was strategic about the film that I think is part of its brilliance is you have no idea what's going on.
Right.
Because she has no idea what's going on.
Yeah.
So, like, when they say to her, like, the king and queen, like, have no idea that there's, like, a revolution going on out there. Like, people hate them.
Yeah.
People are starving, whatever. Like, and she's like, what do you mean?
Right.
It's like, she doesn't know.
Well,
that's not important to her because she's told from the minute she gets there, like, being successful at court and in society is what's important.
There are no scenes outside. There are no scenes outside of Versailles.
Right. So she's in that bubble.
Yeah. And in the middle of the – or, like, towards the end of the middle of the movie, when they have that great, like, the let her eat cake scene, you see a shot of the main grounds from the outside and you hear a roaring crowd.
And you hear the guy say, and do you know when we said we were starving, do you know what she said?
And then her
like exaggerated version of her
black
saying,
lipstick.
Let them eat cake.
Yeah. Right, right. And then cuts to her being like, I wouldn't say that. Which she didn't say that. It was from a political cartoon.
Yeah, there was tons of pamphlets about her that were just fake of like stuff that she said and
she like
she
took
was a witch
the blame
and she was a lesbian
for
and she
like
was this
yeah.
and that.
I mean, it's not like it was it obviously was a corrupt system. I mean, and the movie shows that, like,
for sure.
The fact that you need 30 people for you to eat breakfast is just, it's all so fucking insane.
But she was scapegoated because she was a foreigner.
Yeah.
And she's a woman.
And she's a woman, right.
And I love, though, that, like, because you as the audience are so ignorant to, like, what's going on outside of Versailles, it feels ludicrous to you when it's, like, all these people blame her for everything.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
like, that's so silly.
And the movie doesn't give you any more politics than it needs to. It has a few scenes where you see them talking about sending aid to America.
Yeah.
And the movie kind of tries to posit that that's the biggest problem.
Uh-huh.
I mean, there were other problems,
but
that the richest people paid no taxes.
Right. But you also
which
see
is
a
the
lot
problem
of,
we have now.
You see a lot of advisors telling them, like, don't worry about it.
Yeah.
We've got it.
Yeah. It's crazy because like they live in this like fake little
and they were
pretend
they
world.
They were children.
Yes.
Both of them.
Yeah. Like 15 or whatever.
Yeah.
And they live in this little fake pretend world and then like it just comes crashing down and like in the beginning it was like, no, you can't hand things to people because whatever. And then at the end like somebody runs into her bedroom and was like, yeah, they're coming to kill you. You should run.
Yeah.
Like – but then they're still pretending, like, well, you hear the shouting outside. They're still eating dinner and pretending.
That's such a cool It's just such an effective scene.
Yeah.
When you see them eating the dinner and you hear the people outside raging.
Right, because they're hungry and you're just,
you have this big feast.
I love anything. I'm so anti-royalty. I love anything that points out how stupid it is.
But, and yet, you feel sympathy for her especially, but also him, I think, a little at the end, too.
He's just awkward.
Yeah. Yeah. He's just an awkward, weird kid.
I think Jason Schwartzman's performance is like pitch perfect because I feel like it's one degree away from a comedy performance. It's almost there, but not.
Yeah.
But like he is like in the beginning, he's like an awkward guy. Then like later on, he's like a child. Like he's like when they're at the meeting, he's like looking through the thing. Like like he's like playing with his sword.
And he really did make keys and locks for Javi. And
is that true? It seems like such a crazy irony that he won't fuck her and he's obsessed with keys.
So we'll get to that in a second. And also apparently it is real that like an older advisor had to like have a talk with him about how to have sex. Yeah. Because he just like didn't know.
Well, he was 15.
And there's also like some theory that maybe he had like some kind of something wrong with his penis.
Okay.
Like the skin, his foreskin was too tight or something. Uh-huh. But... Did you – okay, so the first time I saw it, I remember I saw it with a friend, and we both kind of read it as like, is he supposed to be gay?
Yeah. I think I Googled, was he gay?
Okay, so that's
– Well, no, wait, you know why? Because, the whole movie's like high school, Versailles High School.
Right.
So at one of the first, like, dinner scenes, somebody makes that assertion.
Right.
One of the people the court is like, oh, he's spending too much time with the stable boy.
Right.
So that's what puts it into your mind.
Right. And I don't think that is the case. I mean, you could read it that way. Yeah. But anyway. Yeah, it is interesting that the locks and keys thing. Because he has trouble putting, the key in the lock.
Yeah, yeah.
But then it ends up happening. They have kids. It really follows them and her pretty closely. It speeds up a bit towards the end. Like you see she has a kid and then you see it disappear from the portrait. So the kid passed away.
Right.
What do you think about, I know we're all over the place, but the last shot is of the inside of the palace, like just destroyed.
Yeah.
But you don't see any of what happened later.
Yeah, you don't see her get beheaded.
And you know she was not beheaded immediately. She was like kept in prison and tortured for months.
Really?
Before they beheaded her. And kept tortured her children and kept her in earshot so she could hear her children calling out for her.
That's crazy.
For months and then killed her. So all that ugliness is not in the movie.
Right.
But it's like, I guess you kind of know that it's bad. I don't know. At the end, essentially, they're just being taken away by.
Right. Well, I guess I do find the last image arresting.
Yeah.
It's almost, I mean, so much of it is in that bedroom. So much of it is like it's all about, I mean, it's all about like, that's the deal that her parents make, right?
Right.
You become the queen, you become the whatever, you fuck him, you make a male heir, right?
And then our countries will be.
Right. Yeah. And then, exactly. Like, and So showing that because like you see the glass broken, so you don't see it, right? You don't see them come and grab them. Like you see them in there and they hear it outside, and then there's that great scene where she goes out and bows to them, and they all stop for a second.
Yeah,
and then
at the end you see them being taken away in a carriage,
right? And that's it, really. For them.
And she said, "He's like, are you admiring your gardens?" And she says, "I'm saying goodbye."
Yeah, it's. I think what the music does is it allows you – it makes you think of her the way you think of a contemporary person her age.
Yes.
And look, people are different throughout different periods. You know, a 14-year-old now isn't the same as a 14-year-old then. But I think it helps to humanize her to compare her to kids that you know. Even like her relationship with is he a duke? No. What is
the guy who is kind of like a father figure to her?
No. The one who she like hooks up with. Thurston.
He's like a soldier.
But he has some kind of title.
Yeah, something. Yeah.
It's like innocent. You know what I mean? Like she like likes a guy. Like she's probably like 20 at that point or something. Like they. It's hard to sell it in the beginning, but they're supposed to be like real children in the beginning, and it's crazy that they're like. the king is like, how is her bosom?
Riptorn.
Riptorn is such brilliant casting as like, because he's so anachronistic.
Yeah.
But like, so everyone's so proper, then he's there with his favorite, who's like this ex-sex worker.
Yeah.
And he's amazing. Like laughing with her, and then like they're like playing sex games, and it's crazy.
She's so good. That part is so good. The like cat and mouse thing that they play.
Oh yeah, when yeah, you see yeah.
them in the bedroom together.
Yeah, it's so compared to like their bedroom.
Yeah. Oh my god, that's so good.
And she's played by Azia Argento, who's the daughter of Dario Argento, who is the Italian horror filmmaker. So it's interesting because she's sort of like a mirror version of Sofia Coppola.
Yeah,
like the female filmmaker daughter of a more famous male filmmaker.
Yeah,
and she's great in it.
I love all the scenes of like people sitting at a table, but like whispering about people that are sitting right next to them.
Yeah,
and I feel like Sofia Coppola does such a good job of like picking up. There's such good sound work.
Yeah,
but also like, and not just sound, but like pieces of dialogue that you hear.
And it's almost like I find myself going, do they all hear it? Is this all performative? Like, can they all hear them all talking shit?
I think that's what it's supposed to be, but all of them are pretending that they can't.
Yes. That first scene where they're sitting, and then like Azio Gentle burps, and then the guy's like, did she burp?
Yeah.
Did you hear that? And yeah. They'll talk shit about somebody and then turn right to that person and say something nice.
Yeah.
Or like there's a scene where like Molly Shannon and Moaning Myrtle are like talking to Marie Antoinette, and they're like talking shit. And then like the very next shot is them talking shit about Marie Antoinette. Yeah. And it's like it really makes Versailles High School.
Yeah.
It's all just like rumors and people talking shit about each other.
Yeah. I love the getting ready every day.
Yeah.
That's such a nod to All That Jazz, right?
Oh, the dun, 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 dun.
It's the same music even.
Yeah, I didn't think of that. I didn't think of that.
Of like the daily, every morning.
Well, it's sort of like the monotony of her life.
Yeah.
I love the idea of like, you're in a cage, you're a prisoner in a cage, but instead of treating you like you're, a worthless person, we're treating you like you're the best person, and that's why you're a prisoner.
And you're better than all of us.
Right. You're better than everyone, so therefore you can't touch us, or you can't reach, you can't hand stuff to us. Like, that's such a fascinating idea, especially because, you know, like, I've heard, so, like, speaking of You're Wrong About, like, the You're Wrong About Diana episodes and, you know, all the stuff recently about the movie Spencer, which just reminded me a lot of the movie Spencer.
I haven't seen that. But I heard that's a really good movie.
It's really good because it's not a biography, but it's a movie about a true event. It's about Princess Diana over like a Christmas vacation, and but it's like a body horror movie. It's like Black Swan, but with a real person who really existed, and just like it's the same stuff. Like, you know, like the people loved her, but the family wasn't happy with her, and Charles was cheating on her, and she couldn't make him happy, and all the pressure goes on her. Like with Marie Antoinette, at least the way it's depicted in this film, all of the blame of them not consummating the marriage is on her. Like, why are you not using your charms more?
Her own mother writes her letters like, what are you doing over there?
Yeah. Your position is so dangerous. And like, she tries and he's just not into it.
Yeah.
It's it's interesting because it ends up, it kind of echoes what happens later, which is that the woman takes all the blame.
Yep.
This reminds me of Amber Heard. Look, I don't love Amber Heard, and actually, I don't know enough about her to even have an opinion on her. But what I did notice from afar is what seemed like a toxic relationship between two toxic people, and how the internet seemed to, with glee, make him a hero and make her the devil.
Well, the internet hates a woman.
Yeah, like any chance, like whenever it's like, oh, we're allowed to hate this woman, we're all in agreement that this woman's bad. Oh, let's get it all out of our system. Lock her up. Whenever like, even like so-called like nice guys, like whenever they have like a little bit of an excuse to like hate a woman. It's like, yes, I can get it all out right now. Yeah. And that's what made me think of Amber Heard during this movie.
And not even just hate them, but like just fall right into the traps of like the same old like misogynistic kind of things. Like, it makes me think, not to get into too much into politics, but like it makes me think of like, remember when Elizabeth Warren was running for president?
Yeah.
And then like a bunch of like very progressive men got mad because she said that Bernie Sanders said that a woman couldn't be president. And then immediately were like, she's a snake. She's a liar.
And
like just heard so vitriolic.
The language
and
is they, always like, the same.
They flooded her tweets with like snake emojis and stuff. And it's like, she's like a deceitful, lying woman. Like,
right. It's so funny how like it always goes exactly to the same. Right. The same
place.
The same language.
Right.
The same language. It's so wild. It's crazy. It really is crazy. Like Marie Antoinette is the reason that a whole that a whole country is poor,
right?
Like, because not the king or anyone else in the.
She's spending all the money on wigs and parties and stuff.
Right. It's like, yeah. It's.
But while we're there, those wigs, the wig work in this movie, the clothes. I mean, everything about it's just. The thing about a Sofia Coppola movie is you can watch it and enjoy it, but then you can watch it again with the sound off
and silky just smooth.
Let it wash over you.
Silky smooth.
All those shoes were made by Manolo Blahnik. I don't know if you knew that.
I did not know that.
They were like all custom made. I mean, everything just looks so beautiful.
Yeah.
And then there was that amazing Annie Leibovitz shoot in Versailles
for Vogue
when the movie was coming out.
Yeah. Her hair gets taller as the movie goes on.
And she did, like, I love the ships in it and stuff.
Oh, I love that scene. He puts a bird in it and she's like, is it too much?
Yeah. So good. I think her performance is really good. It's interesting. When that movie came out, it wasn't the best reviewed. People got really hung. Critics got hung up on the anachronisms,
which is,
and a lot of people panned her performance since she wasn't.
Her performance was.
She
very
couldn't
good.
Carry it, but I thought her performance was really good.
And I think she's actually a very good actress.
Yeah,
if you ever seen Melancholia, she's incredible in that. She's very good. And she's continued to work. She hasn't like she just is in stuff.
Yeah.
No, I think she's very good, and I think she helps humanize her. Even, you know, more because she has this like baby face. So in the beginning, you're really like, wow, she's like a little kid.
Yeah.
Like when they like are dressing her and she's like naked. And it's like
they take the dog away. That really.
I know. It's heartbreaking.
They like rip the little dog out of her arms.
Yeah. Yeah. Mops.
That little Austrian dog isn't welcome in France.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think her performance is great.
And it's so sweet that you see like she's got like a million other little dogs. Yeah. But she still wants Mops back.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and she's good with her children and stuff.
Yeah.
Going back to the clothing, there's when you do look at the costumes, there is an effect that's happening that is slightly surreal or slightly maybe not surreal, but there's something when you look at it, it's like it makes sense, but there's also something else that's in your mind that's like, why do I feel like this is modern and not from the time? And I think it's because they make everything match. Every person matches each other and all of them match the surrounding.
Right.
Like, I don't think that, like, they didn't repaint the walls every day to match what she's wearing.
No, but I will say that if you've ever been in any of those European palaces, they're all the same way. Nobody liked an open floor plan back then. Uh-huh. Everything was about how many rooms you have.
Yeah.
And every room was a theme. So every outfit that she has, they just put her in a room where she matched that theme.
Interesting.
So those rooms are all real. They're all from Versailles.
Wow, yeah, yeah.
So they didn't touch anything. They weren't allowed to.
But did she make her friends match her?
No. I mean, that part is not real. But
you know what I'm saying? Like, this is definitely period costuming.
It feels designed.
Right, right. Yeah. It's period costuming, yet it feels postmodern. It feels like you're using color. Like, it's the shapes that it would be, but you're using colors that you wouldn't use at that time.
I mean, they have a lot. I feel like whenever I think of that movie, there are a lot of like soft pinks and purples, like candy colored.
Yeah, yeah. It's the food looks so good. All
my
pastries.
God. And I love just the beginning, the opening with that song. And then you just see her on the Chase Lounge, like eating like cake. And it's like, that's
such a great opening
not
image.
Her, though.
Right. That's just like her. that's the let them eat cake one.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, and she's got a cake there.
Right.
Which cake means the stuff that when you make bread in the oven, it's the crumbs. Right, it means let them eat crumbs.
Right. And it's somebody else said that years before her.
Yeah, and so yeah, she didn't say it. But I just say that because I feel like people think like, well, isn't cake good? Isn't cake rich? And it's like, that's not the cake.
That's not what even she means. The cake that she meant. Yeah, no.
But she didn't say it.
Yeah.
Well, that reminds me of like, I once showed Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom for a lesson that was talking about like basically like xenophobia in movies.
Yeah.
And there's a scene in that where they're like eating monkey brains. Which is very anachronistic because well, it's very incorrect because, in fact, the Indian diet's very vegetarian.
Right.
So I was just like, where does it come from? And I didn't do deep research. I just did some Googling research. And I found that it all comes kind of like the Let Them Eat Cake. It all comes back to a satire. Somebody yep. wrote a satire mocking how different Indian yeah. people are, and it's said like that
Orientalism
that,
thing.
Yeah, exactly. And said in that they eat monkey brains.
Right.
They don't eat monkey brains.
Yeah, of course not.
but it's like it makes you feel like, you know what? Maybe we're just think about how often satire backfires. Like people believe it.
I know.
But yeah. So
well, at the time, like pamphlets were a big thing.
Yes.
Like political
yes.
pamphlets and. A lot of they were very, very like political cartoons. They were very, very critical of her, and a yeah. lot of them very also homophobic. A lot of them depicted her as a lesbian, and like would like have drawings of her like with her friend,
Marie Antoinette.
The one that Rose Byrne plays.
Well, isn't that
like her and her friend like in like sexual positions?
Is that not crazy when you think about Hillary Clinton though?
Yeah,
because that's exactly what they did to her. Yeah. Even before she ran for, even when she was just the first lady, yeah. people were like, she's a lesbian.
Every woman in politics is compared to either Marie Antoinette or Lady Macbeth at some point, or is treated like that. But yeah,
let's see. There's
and a witch. She was accused of being a witch too.
Of course, yeah. It is a gorgeous movie.
I love the shot where they're like at their coronation. Where you see them walking down the steps.
Yeah.
Oh, so good.
I love like when we see her like in the opera performance and she claps and everyone because uh-huh. people have she has like everyone likes her at that point,
right?
And then she does it later on and they don't clap yeah, with
it's
her.
It's a great like little marker of how the tide right. has and turned
it's
a, against
it's
her.
It's an interesting little marker of like how in her own little way she resisted.
Right.
Right. She hung out with her friends. Uh-huh. She surrounded herself with people she actually trusted.
Right.
She made that little village
yeah.
that she like would live in. Like
But how crazy is it you see the actual woman who works there like go in and get the eggs, place the eggs or something before her.
Yeah.
And then she comes in like, oh, I found an egg. And it's like it was all pretend.
Yeah, yeah. Well that's
And apparently on You're Wrong About they talk about how like that was like in fashion at the time was like pretending like you're a farmer.
Interesting.
It was like a fun thing for rich people to do.
And we have that scene where she like says to her dresser, like, make me something more natural that I can wear there.
Yeah.
As
you
much,
see her reading.
As much as she's like indulgent, I feel like it never I always have sympathy for her. I never feel like, she's overindulgent. I feel like again, I think about like someone in her 20s who like that's the world that she's in anyway. Like that's the world they want her to be that way. She just kind of makes
it's like a
her own.
It's like a simulacrum. It's like a
yeah. You're right. Yeah. Exactly.
I remember when we first watched it, you said that like you read it as like the beginning was like high school, and then when she gets to that part, that's like her in college.
Oh,
and
interesting.
You see her reading a lot. Like I think she's reading Walden or something.
Sounds like a good insight. I don't remember making it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like the whole thing is fake, and then she makes like Disneyland. She makes like a fake place inside the fake place.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And it's her little like respite from how much everything sucks.
Yeah.
There's a lot of comedians in it.
Yeah.
What do you think about the casting of comedians? Steve Coogan's a comedian. Molly Shannon's a comedian. Rip Torn's not a comedian, but he's basically known for comedic parts.
He, yeah, you know, I don't know. None of them are really funny. in it, except Rip Torn is kind of funny in it.
Yeah.
But I think in general, like casting comedians in like semi-dramatic roles, I feel like part of why it's like a recipe for success often is because comedians, I think, are really good at committing themselves to, like, character. Like, yeah, they're good character actors. Mm-hmm. And they all do a really good job.
Right.
Because I think that they can go big and broad, but then they can also, like, bring it back to some, like, really subtle moments, yeah, that are really good.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Just they give solid performances. But it's interesting that there are so many funny people in like, not that funny role. Like, not really funny roles.
I find myself... And I mean, I guess it's not a lot. There's really only like three, and Rip Torn's not even really a comedian. But I feel
like people who are known for like big, broad performances.
Yeah, I found myself thinking like seeing it in line with the music choice, like anachronism on purpose. Anachronism as itself a text, or as itself a signifier that adds to the text.
Right.
Like, you know, Molly Shannon from other things.
Right.
So seeing her in this, it makes you realize that how silly it really was.
Well, I was going to say,
like,
I think
it's
with also
the costumes. Like, you realize, like, they are wearing costumes.
Right.
Right. They, right. Like, they, like, we always, when we do historical stuff, we make it like everyone's so comfortable in it.
Right.
And I like how in this movie, it seems like they are all,
it's all
playing pretend, yeah, and performing.
You're right. I think it highlights like the silliness and the vanity and the foppishness of like all the,
right,
people in the court.
Right.
And then you're right. They were wearing costumes, and like a lot of like the reason, like one of the big reasons why like royalty liked to go to the theater was to, yeah, be seen.
You're right. Right.
And it was like, that's what you see it in the movie. Like,
yeah,
she's at the opera, but people are all looking at her.
Yeah. 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 Well, there's a great thing, I noticed it when I watched it again today, where the first scene we see Jason Schwartzman, he trips.
Yeah.
He like trips, and it's like, yeah, like, yeah.
It makes him so human right away.
It makes him so human. It's like, that's something you would never see in anything else.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that's, it reminds me, this is a weird
comparison
to make, because it's a movie I only saw once. I don't even really remember if it's good or not. A Million Ways to Die in the West.
Yeah.
Do you remember how in that movie...
I actually really like that movie.
And again, I remember liking it when I saw it. But in that movie, the protagonist, played by Seth MacFarlane, is almost like contemporary in his...
Oh, yeah. Like, and he's so meta and like...
He's like, everything sucks.
We're in the past. West. Yeah, yeah.
He's like, everything sucks. There's a million ways to die. Everybody smells.
Yeah.
Like, I love that. And I feel like there's a little bit of that in Marie Antoinette of the past isn't this like great thing. Like, the right past is awkward and weird, just like now is awkward and weird. Like,
yeah,
like everybody was weird in those wigs.
Yeah.
Those wigs were probably uncomfortable. Everyone's, yeah, tripping. Everybody's, you know, like there's a scene where Ozzy Argento, her like little whatever guy behind her steps on her,
yeah,
on her trail. Yeah, yeah, and she's like, great, stop it. Like, that shit probably happened all the time because they're wearing silly nonsense.
You know, what do you think of the length and the pacing?
It
can get a little slow. It gets a little slow at points.
Well, it does have a sort of languid feel to the way it moves, but I think
it's kind of, the film itself is very, the plot is very episodic.
Yes.
Like, things are conflicts, and then they're resolved, and then you move on to the next conflict, and then there's a resolution, right? It's like,
and then all of a sudden there's,
it's her versus Ozzy Argento, and then that goes away. And her, she can't have sex with the husband, and then that goes away. And then, you know,
right.
It kind of just follows.
And then the
that
end kind of just is almost abrupt.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
yeah,
you said, it speeds up towards the end.
Yeah.
I do think that the beginning works better.
I agree. Yeah.
But the middle's good too. Like, them going to the ball, the masked ball, that's a lot of fun. And the contemporary music there is, yeah, really works very well. Because remember, Rose Byrne doesn't come into the middle.
Yeah.
And she's so good. I actually love the line. She has a line that
Rose Byrne is a comedic actress.
Yeah, she's, yes, exactly. Maybe, yeah, we think of her now.
Primarily, yeah.
She's very funny in it. Like, it's got to be improvised. There's somebody where she's like, what's going on with your hair?
Yeah, yeah, it's so good.
She actually has a line that I think it like really sums up the character of Marie Antoinette, is when Tom Hardy's like jealous that she's like flirting with Fursten, and Rose Byrne goes, she likes to be amused, and he amuses her.
Yeah.
Which is such an interesting sums up. Like, she likes to be amused. She likes good things.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Which is sort of not normal. Like, it's normal.
Right. It's fun. It's like a... Almost like a little bit of a with a way more tragic ending, but almost like a little bit of like a Cher Horowitz Clueless kind of vibe.
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah.
Like I always love that scene, that line in Clueless where he's like, do you have any idea what you're talking about? And she's like, not really. Does it sound like I do? Where she like acknowledges that like she's putting on a show for a lot of it.
Well, one of the things I think Clueless is an incredible movie, but one of the things that I always thought was great about it was that they make Cher
a good person.
A good person. Like, you don't root against her despite her, you know, vapidness.
Yeah.
And her privilege.
Right.
And yeah, I guess I feel a little bit that way about Marie Antoinette. Like, I'm always rooting for her. I always am with her, no matter what she's doing.
Yeah.
What's your favorite look of all the outfits that she wears? What's your favorite look?
I think... It's like that pink number that she wears. I think it's when they're at church. There's a scene where she's like praying.
Okay.
I think they're in like the chapel praying and she's wearing like a pink outfit with a hat. Mm-hmm. I mean, she wears a lot of pink outfits with hats, but it's such a great look. I like her in like those like powdery blues and pinks. Yeah. And then towards the end of the movie, she wears like a lot of darker colors and stuff as she gets older. But I like that sweet spot, like right in the, like toward the beginning.
Right, right, right. When she was getting into it.
Yeah.
The I Want Candy montage.
Yeah, that is so fun.
Yeah.
Fun. What's yours?
The costume ball.
Okay.
Because it's anachronistic. There's no, I could be wrong. Some scholar could be like, no, that was a very popular costume at the time. But to me, just wearing a like Ninja Turtles, like, first of all, it completely shows who she is,
right? Of course,
which is crazy. And just like the way, just like this one like horizontal line over her eyes,
it's something
fun. Like a little bit daring about, she's not hiding it that much.
I'm talking about this one.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's like a bubble. I'm sorry, I just pulled up the picture. It's like a bubblegum Barbie pink,
right? That's exactly what I'm talking about.
A lot of fur.
Like, no way at the time they had that pigment. Like, that kind of pink, that neon pink.
Well, if you look, she stands out.
Yes.
The other ones look more realistic.
Right, right, right. Right.
But yeah, she looks amazing in this.
Like, the shape, Judy Davis.
Ugh, she's great. So good. Also, like, she's funny. In the movie, she's funny.
Yeah.
This, madame, is Versailles.
Yeah. She's like, isn't this a little
She's just so, ridiculous? Like, crazy, like, with her eyes and everything. The costumes are just amazing. It kind of got snubbed at the Oscars.
I thought it won an Oscar for costumes.
I think that's the only thing it was nominated for, which I think it deserved.
Bullshit. Well, what won in 2000? So it was the 2007 Oscars, right?
I believe so.
Because it came out 2006.
Well, just Google like Marie Antoinette Oscars.
Well, I want to know who won in 2007.
Probably something shitty that nobody likes anymore.
Best. 2007 Best Picture nominees. The Departed. Well, that's a good movie.
Okay.
It wasn't even nominated for Best Movie. It was the nominees for Best Movie are The Departed, Letters to Iwo Jima, The Queen, Babel, and Little Miss Sunshine.
You sure that's not the next year?
That's 2007.
Would it be 2006?
It came out in 2006, so she'd be eligible the next Oscars.
Okay. Was this her second film after Lost in Translation?
I believe so, yeah. This was the one she always wanted to make. She made Lost in Translation because she was sort of caught up in writing it.
Yeah, but I feel like it got a lot of that, like, I remember it not being very well reviewed and like a lot of like, oh, this is like her sophomore slump outing.
Let's get back to people hating women.
Yeah, for sure.
Sofia Coppola, from the time she starred in The Godfather Part 3, people hated her. Because everyone was like, oh, she can't act. She's just in this movie because her father's a director, which of course she is. But again, like, what the fuck was she like? She's going to say no. Like, her father was like, do you want to be in this movie?
Well, Winona Ryder was supposed to be.
Right, right. Which, by the way, I don't think Winona Ryder would have been better as Vito Corleone's.
No.
As Michael Corleone's daughter. I mean, at least she looks the part. She looks like a real Italian girl.
She does.
So the knives are out for her. And I think, you know, it could be a little bit of that.
What's funny is I'm looking it up on Rotten Tomatoes, and a lot of the recent reviews, 2023, 2022, like people who have revisited it, it has a lot of positive ones.
Right.
But if you go back to when it came out, they're all negative. And I love to play this game of like what misogynistic things people, like critics, said at the time.
Yeah.
This could be the story of Paris Hilton.
Oh boy, that's so 2006.
Yeah, so 2006. But also awful.
Right. And also, like, what does that say about the movie?
It's her third film. This one says, with her third film, Sofia Coppola exhibits an annoying preference for style over substance.
I completely disagree. I feel like...
Wait, listen to this one. Sorry. Coppola's film is solipsistic, shrill, melodramatic.
Shrill?
Shrill. Love that. And stunningly barren of human observation.
I literally... Who wrote that? Who said that?
That's... I don't know, some rando.
I couldn't agree less with everything she's like. Maybe it's a little solipsistic. I can never say that word. But it's being that it's all in Versailles, it's kind of all in her head. But that's not even what they mean. They mean it's like she's up her own ass.
Wait, you want to hear a great one from Seattle, Washington?
Sure.
Inadvertently, Coppola has painted a pathetic portrait of a spoiled kitten, not unlike herself.
Ooh, see what I mean?
Born into unlimited resources and without a thought in her pretty head before she lost it entirely.
Jesus.
We hate women.
And we hate her because her father helped her get her career.
Yeah, it's venomous.
Oh, no, we're forgetting. Yeah, the first movie is Virgin Suicides. Forgot about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a amazing. Good movie, too.
Yeah. I love Virgin Suicides.
She's good at, like, and we were talking in the last episode, moody. She's doing the new Priscilla movie about Priscilla Presley. She's good at, like, young women, like, kind of coming of age stuff.
Yeah.
And the sort of, like, melancholy of being a young woman. I love this scene in Marie Antoinette where she's hooked up with her crush. And she asks to be excused, and she just goes to her bedroom, and she's just laying down. It's just like a montage of her, like, just like feeling good and thinking good things. And like, there's a shot of her with like her hands on her chest, looking precious. And it's just like she's just indulging in having a crush, like a real person.
Yeah.
And it's so funny. While that's happening, you know, I mean, look, it's so serious. Like, while that's happening, people are starving to death.
Of course.
Right. But the fact that the blame goes on her is what's crazy.
Right.
It's also interesting, like, when the king dies, I don't know if this is something that really happened, but when the king dies, Jason Schwartzman says, like, God help us, we're too young to rule.
Apparently he really said that. You know, I remember they talked about that on, what's it called, You're Wrong About. I love that, like, the minute the king dies, they're like, he's gone. We have a new king. And they like run to him.
Yeah.
It's like, so crazy.
But that's the stuff I love. Cause like, I feel like in a more typical period piece, that would be depicted in a sort of, very serious, austere way. Whereas in this, they make it weird and awkward. Like it would be
It's for people awful.
For people to be running and being like, now you're the magic thing.
Yeah.
Cause the last magic guy died.
Right.
And it's also like, you think of people who are rule, or you think of people in that situation, like loving them, but it's not, it's like this weird, it's like Regina George from Mean Girls. It's like this weird, like, we hate you, but also openly love you.
Right.
Like, there's a scene where she's like, she's going to cry because Louis the 16th, right?
Her husband's Louis.
Yeah, his brother has a wife, a
baby.
And so she is a male, and it is a male.
Yeah.
So she feels like humiliated because they got married after them.
Had a boy, yeah.
Yeah, and she got married. They got married later, and she consummated it first. So she goes to cry, and she's walking through court, and a woman, like, very loudly says, like, give us an heir.
Yeah. When will you give us an heir?
Yeah. Which is, like, again, I don't know if that really happened, but the idea of, like, it's presentational. Like, just like them whispering at the dinner table.
And the fact that it's her fault.
Right, it's her fault. When will
you give us an heir?
Right. But what's more interesting to me is that thing of, like, the presentation of, like, pretending like we love you, but right in front of you, we're saying we don't love you.
Right.
Just like the dinner scene of, like, I'm going to talk shit about you right in front of you.
Yeah.
Like, it's really kind of wild. But again, it reminds me of high school.
Yeah.
It is like high school.
Yeah.
You know, and they say all of life is like high school. It is true.
Yeah.
God, that review has really bananas.
Yeah, right?
to be so mad at her. To be so mad at her. But which is like, by the way, like to me, nepotism. If you're to mock nepotism, you should talk about people that suck at what they do. Like she's obviously really talented,
right?
Like maybe she wouldn't have had the opportunities to start the way she did, without her father. But like she has a lot of talent.
But also, nepotism has been around forever in every industry. Will be around forever in every industry.
Right.
And also, like, I do feel like...
She wouldn't still be making movies if like, she were that bad.
Right. And I do feel like a lot of women get more shit for nepotism than men do.
And look at the son, Roman Coppola. He's made a few movies. He's not a big name. No one thinks about him. No one compares him to anybody. He's the exact... Like, he doesn't have the goods that much.
Right.
And so he's not
anybody. And she's also, you know, to give her a lot of credit, because I really do love her as a filmmaker, like... She has her own voice and her own.
Yeah, she's very different from Francis Ford Coppola.
So different from her father.
Other than they both share a love for classic Hollywood cinema. Like in Marie Antoinette, they button a lot of scenes by fading to black, which I feel is very old Hollywood. Yeah. But other than that, I don't see any comparison to the look and feel of her films and the look and feel of his films at all.
No, not at all.
She's
great. I love Virgin Suicides. I only saw Lost in Translation once, but I remember really liking it.
I've seen that probably the most, and I really like that
movie. I love this movie. I really liked The Bling Ring. I didn't see The Beguiled, but I really wanted to.
Isn't Kirsten Dunst as herself in The Bling Ring? Yeah. Isn't she one of the people that they steal from?
They don't steal from her, but they see her out at a club. Oh, okay. And they're like, oh my God, that's Kirsten Dunst.
They steal from some real celebrities, though.
Yeah. Lindsay Lohan, Paris Hilton. Kirsten Dunst is in a... They must be friends in real life. She was in Virgin Suicide. She was in Marie Antoinette.
Yeah.
She was in Blank Ring. She's in The Beguiled.
I didn't see The Beguiled. Have you seen
The Beguiled? The Beguiled is a remake.
I don't know anything about it.
It's about a group of... It's based on a novel that then was made into a movie in the 60s that then... I don't know if this is a remake of that film or just another adaptation of the novel, but it's about like... A guy, like an injured man, like is taken in and nursed back to health by like this house of like women, and then they like start to like I think they like torture him or something.
Oh, that's fun.
Slash flirt with him, seduce him. Like it's a lot of fun from what it appeared, but I never saw it.
Interesting.
But she's in it. She's like the star of it.
Interesting. Danny Houston. How do we feel about him?
Yeah. He's all right.
He's got a presence like his father.
Yeah.
He spoke about nepotism, another nepotism person, right? Yeah,
he's. I always think of him in American Horror Story.
Naughty
Pine? That's him.
Yeah.
Well, that's Jessica Lange, but she's talking to him.
I realized when I was watching it today, the only character that actually speaks French is her daughter, Maria Therese.
Yeah.
Why do you think that is?
Why did she speak French in the film?
Yeah, like why... Why is the only other than like maybe some people yelling some French things in the crowd at the end?
I mean, really, in real life, they all were speaking French.
Right, exactly. So why is the child the only one that's depicted as speaking French? I mean, maybe it was a little There's French this girl weird
thing of that's like it's like filmic, where like no matter what the country is, if they have a British accent, you're meant to. That's code for they're speaking whatever language that is.
Right.
And in this, they have American accents, a lot of them.
Yeah. But, especially Rip Torn, right?
But some of them
sounds like just
Right. But some of them are British. Fuck I think me. A decent amount of Fuck them you. Are British.
Right.
And that's just the thing. I don't know.
Well, because of the...
But she has an American accent.
That's a meme, too. The idea of that accent meaning class.
And just, it's just European. But any she doesn't kind of really European. Have an accent.
She kind of builds one over the time. But in the beginning, she really just sounds like
American.
A kid, yeah.
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 Rip Torn just sounds so American.
He's so great. He's so in his own thing. But that's what's great because he's the king. So it's like he
And I think he was supposed to, I think the real Louis the, I think he was Louis the 14th. I want to, or maybe he was Louis the 15th. I don't know. I guess he'd be Louis the 15th. He was supposedly like a very colorful character anyway in real life. Yeah. So it makes sense that it would be him.
What are they like, when after they get married and they all watch them like go to bed?
Yeah, that's...
And like, he, like, bows to them. He's like, good work!
Yeah, that's so good.
And then the next morning, they're like, nothing happens. Yeah. Because they check the sheets and stuff, like, weird.
It's so weird.
Like, the idea of, like, consummating your marriage. And it's just all very odd. And like the way religion is like part of it.
Yeah, because like it's like you were chosen by God.
Yeah.
To lead this country.
Right.
Divide into divide right or whatever.
Yeah.
It's so weird.
It's sad when he dies because he sends his favorite away, and then when he's dying, yeah, he calls for her.
I know. That makes me sad always. What's her name? Why can't I remember her name? I just watched this.
DuBarry. DuBarry, yes. Yeah.
That's so sad when he calls for her.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he sends her away because they like, because it'd be like shameful.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you ever see The Favorite?
No, I haven't.
That's a good movie. It's fucked up, but it's good.
It's fucked up?
It's like, yeah, it's fucked up. It's okay. It's a good movie, but it's like, it's uncomfy.
Okay. I feel you. Yeah, I've heard there's like a fingering going on in it.
There's a lot of fingering. There's a lot of fingering. It's just the queen has like, she's a lesbian, and she has like two younger women who are both like fighting to be her favorite.
So interesting. It's so interesting that The Favorite
was like a thing.
Was like an actual. It's like an actual title,
right?
Which is crazy.
It was just like, I guess, just the one you like to spend the most time with. But then that became like a badge of honor.
Right. But then like in some cases, like in that movie and in for Marie Antoinette with the king, like it's the person that you're fucking.
Right.
Your favorite is, you know, and the weird like respect people kind of do and don't have for them.
Yeah.
Like she's mad. She can't speak to Marie Antoinette first because of rank. But she's mad that Marie Antoinette hasn't spoken to her. Yeah.
There are a lot of people at Versailles today.
Which is such a nothing thing to say. Yeah. And like everybody's happy about it.
Yeah, yeah.
Like the way they all nod to each other. Yeah. Like, look, it happened. Everybody's happy. And that's interesting because she takes that attitude in the beginning because she believes the bullshit.
Yeah, that's what I like. It's like in the beginning, she like gets in on the gossip and stuff. But then you see that she kind of grows out of
it. She grows away. Right. And she becomes closer to like Rose Byrne, who's the – what is she? She's the Duchess of what is it?
Something. I don't know.
I want to say cognac, but it's not cognac. It sounds like it,
though. It just sounds to me. French is, like, so nebulous to me.
What is it? Yeah, French is – I have a hard time with it. Duchess du Polignac.
Polignac. She was her favorite. And then she was the one who, like, there were the lesbian rumors about, if I'm remembering correctly.
But she seemed to just, like, be, like, her, like,
friend. Like, her best friend.
But, like her bad bitch friend that built her up.
Yeah.
Like, she's that friend that's like, go ahead, have another drink. Come on, enjoy yourself. It's your birthday.
Her birthday party is so fun. When they're, like, running
they're outside.
Outside, yeah.
I like when they watch all the sunrise.
Oh, that was the other thing. I remember, like, when it came out, like, a bunch of, like... historians can really be fucking pills.
Yeah.
And one of them was like, champagne wasn't invented yet. They would have been drinking wine. And it's like, how about you go and fuck yourself?
Oh, boy. Neither were Converse.
Yeah, really.
And she's fucking... Like,
please stop. No one cares.
Yeah, like, yeah. You're on the wrong side of everything. Like, yeah. Stop it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's, I mean, when you use contemporary music, it's almost like a,
like, stop looking for it to be
right. I'm telling you right now, I'm not trying.
Well, it's like the Netflix has like a lot of these, not even just Netflix, but like, yeah, well, I'm thinking like Bridgerton and like the new Persuasion. They've picked up that thread, and I think that's something that Marie Antoinette, Sofia Coppola didn't do with Marie Antoinette that now is very in fashion, and that if it were made today might have happened.
Yeah.
Is it would have had like a diverse cast racially.
Yes. Also, right. Yes.
Which you is would like have something that Bridgerton does and like these
right,
new,
you would have had, you absolutely would have had
these if new Jane Austen adaptations do. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which always is an interesting thing.
Yes, it is. Because again, it's another thing. It's another way of just saying we're not being literal about the past.
Right. Because obviously there were politics about that would have made that impossible. Right.
I mean, that's like all of what
Hamilton
is.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a delicious movie.
Delicious.
And it is cozy in a way, I think.
I think so, for sure.
It's good to watch. Like, I actually like, and again, who knows if this is real, I like the relationship she ends up having with Jason Schwartzman. They seem like they're good buddies.
Yeah.
He seems to like her
They get to a point where, like, the only other person who can understand what they're going through is each other.
Yeah, and in the beginning...
like they love their good parents together.
Yeah, she wants to be by his side when she could run away and leave.
Right.
Right? So she stays by his side. You know, he wants to... At the end, like, when the window breaks, he stands in front of her and the kid to, like, protect them. Like, you know, I like when he's like, all right, don't stay out too late. And she's like, oh, stay with us. But then he doesn't. Like, it seems like he lets her do what she wants. And
yeah.
It's an interesting, it's a cute little, like, relationship.
Yeah.
And
you immediately forgive her or are not even mad at her for cheating on him.
No, because it's, like, who cares? Don't care.
It's all open, like, secrets anyway.
There's that one scene where, like, she's in her little village and he's like, come home. And it's like, he means, like, to that other building. Although it is funny in the beginning when they first meet and she's like trying to talk to him. And she's like, I hear you like keys. And it's like, obviously.
He's so good at playing awkward.
There's a great shot where they're at the dinner table and he's got meat on his fork. But then he uses his knife to push the meat further up the fork.
Yeah.
So it's like, again, it's like. We from our contemporary standpoint imagine that they all are good at all these rules,
right?
When they're not,
right?
Like, they are always still struggling with what's the right way to hold this, and to do that, all of this
it's
stuff.
So performative.
Well, Marie Antoinette, a great movie,
great movie.
Yeah, I very much enjoyed
it. I'm glad you enjoyed watching it again.
Based on the book Marie Antoinette: The Journey by Antonia Fraser. They said, like, why don't you read this more popular biography? And she was like, no, I'm just looking at this one.
And that book, I give her credit for even reading that book, because when I was at the height of my obsession, I bought that book and I was like, I'm going to read it. It is like 1,000 pages. It's an incredibly detailed.
Well, that's like Hamilton is based on that Hamilton book that's like a billion pages.
Yeah. And that's where, like, all those tiny little details come in.
Yeah. Like, a lot of the things. A lot of the dialogue's real. Like, supposedly she really did say, like, when he said, can we go home? And she said, like, you said we could gamble. You didn't say how long we gambled. That's something she really said.
Yeah.
So she seemed to have an actual sense of humor.
Yeah. And apparently, it's not in the movie, but her last words were, I'm sorry, I did not do it on purpose. Because when she was being helped up to the guillotine, she stepped on the executioner's foot.
Yeah. Yeah, she took the brunt of everything. I mean, look, I still think we should eat the rich, but, you know, you gotta eat the right rich.
But yes, yeah. But yeah, there is always. I mean, history is just filled with women being scapegoated.
Yeah. Well, this has been Pop Culture Man Children, PCMC. We come out every Wednesday. We are your go-to podcast for comedic takes. And for non-toxic fandom, pop culture ephemera.
Non-toxic masculinity.
Non-toxic masculinity. Very little masculinity, actually.
But the only masculinity that there is non-toxic.
Yes. I make a stress a point of that because I can't change the title now. But the fact that the word man is in the title, I worry that people... Somebody's like, I want to listen to a podcast about mans. I'm a man. And so they Google man child. Yeah. And then they find that it's not hateful and they're upset.
Well, when you invented this podcast, the world was not run by man children.
Yeah, it was a little different. It's been almost 6 years. Wow. Which is crazy. All right, Anthony, thank you so much for being here. Thank you for coming up with this idea. We end every episode by saying.
Wait, this is fun.
Okay.
By saying au revoir.